And now, your go-to source for year-round fantasy hockey advice, DFS and betting coverage. This is NHL Fantasy on Ice.
We turn the page to September, and that means we're just days away from the NHL season getting underway, and even less so until your fantasy drafts. Jay Khan here with you. No Nick Alberga today, but we do have Chris Meany and Pete Jensen around the table. Means, how are we doing today, buddy?
Fantastic. Yeah, as you said, the calendar, as soon as it flips to September, it does feel like hockey is right around the corner. Preseason action before we know it, and draft season heating up.
I can smell those fantasy draft rooms, right? Getting the boys together, whether you're doing it in person or you're doing it online. So we're getting closer and closer to that time. So today on the show, I want to explain a little bit of what we're going to get into. The fantasy stat projections, whether it's goaltender wins, team wins, maybe teams were higher or lower on stat projections for some players as well. Pete, extensive list from you guys put together here. Basically, all the top names, all the guys, even the deep names we're going to be talking about in some fantasy drafts. We'll go through the list as much as we can today, right, Petey?
Yeah, definitely. We'll be projecting some 40 goal scorers today, some 100 point scorers, not just the obvious names too, a couple of dark horses here and there. Big change compared to last year and all the previous years, right, guys? 84 game season, so we're going to bump a couple of guys up a couple points here and there, and we will also keep tabs on which teams we think will be the most improved and also the biggest regression candidates. There are a few of those as well.
Well, at the top of the board here, means obviously we do have Connor McDavid, 135 points, I believe you guys have him projected for. That sounds about right in my mind based on what this guy does. But we got Nikita Kucherov up there at a big number, Nathan MacKinnon, your usual suspects. But a new name has kind of entered the fold. We've touched on it a little bit over the course of the summer. But Macklin Celebrini now up there with the big boys, keeping some pretty legit company. So I think confirming what we've talked about already a couple times, that Celebrini should certainly be in that top four, at least top five conversation when it comes to your fantasy drafts.
Yeah, there's no question. As you mentioned, we put him into that tier with Nikita Kucherov and Leon Draisaitl when we talked about the rankings debate, and there was no sophomore slump when it came to Macklin Celebrini last year, right? He went from 63 points to 115, 25 goals to 45. You look at the talent surrounding the San Jose Sharks up front. Defensively, I think they got a little bit better as well. So, I mean, the sky's the limit for this kid. I think he can hit the 50-goal mark and wouldn't be shocked if he hit the 120, 125-point mark. And at some day, we're talking about him flirting with 130. Like, he is that good.
There's some interesting names in the mid-80s to me, Pete, in terms of a bounce-back potential. I think that's what really jumped out to me, and we've touched on a couple of these names again throughout the course of the summer, but guys like Austin Matthews, Jack Hughes, who've battled some injuries as well, I see a lot of interesting names there where I think, hey, if these guys are going to slip into the second round, heck, maybe even early third round in some cases, I'm going to potentially get some great value in my fantasy drafts, and I could see these guys. I'm looking at Austin Matthews, 86 projected points. If he stays healthy, Pete, I feel like that number is going to be a lot bigger. Even a William Nylander, his teammate there in Toronto, high 80s, I think that number could be a lot bigger as well.
Right, we've talked about it on previous shows. I'm high on the Leafs offense, whether it's McKenna, Matthews, Nylander, even Tavares and Matthew Knies. Remember, Knies was in the trade rumblings. Sounds like as of now, they're keeping this guy, one of the better category coverage guys, and could also get up there in points if he flanks two superstars on his line at even strength. Might not be on power play one, so take those things into account. But I do really like Matthew Knies as one of the best young players, category coverage guys in the league. And then, yeah, you look at bounce back candidates in general. We're not going to talk too heavily about Connor Hellebuyck because we don't know where he's going to be playing, but you can know that he's going to be a huge bounce back guy as well in terms of the goalie wins and a super high ceiling for that guy, regardless of what team he plays for.
You know, it's pretty tough to project Matthews. Like, Nylander's been pretty consistent. The ceiling for him does seem like a mid-90s point player, could hit the century mark given the talent around him as well. But Matthews, given the games that he has missed, he's somebody that even if he does miss time could score 45, even score 50, Jake, if he just plays 75 games. It's something that we've seen from him before. But Gavin McKenna is a guy that we projected around 63 points. I think Vegas has him around 61.5. We've seen Demidov in around that number last year as well. I think there's only two rookies over the last 15 years or so that have hit the 70-point mark, but there's been several that have been around 63, 65. Do you think that projection for Gavin McKenna is fair, Jake?
I think it. I bet rookies are so hard to project, right? You don't have much to work off of or anything to work off of in terms of a sample size at the NHL level. I suppose you're mostly looking at the talent that's surrounding them and the situation that they're walking into. I certainly looked at Matt Schaefer last year and didn't think he was walking into the greatest situation on Long Island, and we all saw what he did, right? So some guys are just so special that it doesn't even really matter, and the bar has been set very high the last few years here by these rookies that have come in. Macklin Celebrini, even Connor Bedard in his first year in Chicago. So I think it's a fair number, Pete, just based on who is around. Gavin McKenna, if you're sitting in a fantasy draft, are you willing to spend potentially a mid-round pick on this guy, knowing that there is a ceiling, also full well knowing that there is a floor and he could work out and he could have some growing pains as a young player in the league?
I think he's going to play with Matthews. Even if he doesn't, he could play with Tavares. He's a playmaker. He's going to make players around him better and facilitate the offense like we know he did in the college ranks as a freshman. So you look at those other recent point totals, 61 for Bedard a couple years ago as a rookie. Celebrini got 63 in 70 games, so he was a little clip higher. And then Schaefer scored 20-plus goals as a defenseman and had 59 points. So I think it's a reasonable total for 63. We've actually seen him from some other sites projected for much lower than that. So I'm big on McKenna exceeding 60 points in his first year.
Meanie, I wanted to get into the top-tier Dallas Stars conversation with you. They're featuring very heavily in the upper part of these stat projections, and rightfully so with the three superstar players that they have on their roster. And we debated it when we looked at the 250 rankings that you guys put together as well. But Jason Robertson, Mikko Rantanen, Wyatt Johnston, all guys that are going to be going in most leagues in the first couple of rounds. So ordering those players, what was that like for you? And is there a standout out of those three that you're maybe leaning to a little bit more than the other two?
I really like Wyatt Johnston. I've liked Wyatt Johnston now on this show for the past couple of years. We've seen progression from him in each of the last three seasons. He's a beast on the power play, led all players in power play goals, got a heck of a shot. He led all players in snapshot goals. That power play is great. It took a little bit of time for him to get on that first unit, but we saw consistently from him last year. Jason Robertson is an elite goal scorer. He's always going to give you 200-plus shots, going to flirt with 40 goals. None of these guys got 100 points last season, but I think J-Rob can get into the century mark. I think Wyatt can get there. And if we're looking for somebody to bounce back, Mikko Rantanen. I know I joined you, Jake, a couple weeks ago on your show on Sirius, and we talked about the potential for Mikko Rantanen to bounce back. I've seen him go around pick 25, 26. You know, we're talking fantasy draft. You can get this guy late second, early third. I think that's a huge win, but I would rank them Wyatt, Robertson, Mikko, but we all have them for roughly 95, 96 points.
I mean, maybe this is from a couple years ago, right? Wasn't there a year with McDavid, Drysdale, and RNH all getting over 100 at the same time? I mean, you could certainly see that. It's a rare thing to do, but this Dallas team may not have the depth on the third and fourth lines that it had last year, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, but certainly is becoming a top-heavy group that is a vaunted, unmatched group across the league.
Well, there's another group, I think, I don't know if we can put them into that Dallas tier, Jake, but Utah. Utah is a team that, in the offseason, bringing in Trocheck and Anders Lee, some experienced players, but Dylan Gunther finally hit the 40-goal mark. He's a 50-goal scorer, future 50-goal scorer, in my opinion. You have Logan Cooley. If he's healthy, he's another guy that can break out and be a point-per-game player. And then Schmaltz had a surprisingly really good season alongside Keller. So, Jake, that top six is loaded. We don't have a lot of these Utah players, you know, flirting with 95 points. But, you know, Clayton Keller's a guy that we have him at 87. Gunther at 83. These are two players, I think, in particular that can hit the 90-point mark this year.
I think it's some of these situations where we have teams with multiple players all kind of grouped together that all play together, that are all in the same power play. Maybe let my league mates do the work for me, and whichever one ends up falling, that's the one that I take. When we talked about the Dallas Stars, okay, if Rantanen's the third of the Dallas Stars and I'm sitting there, I'm taking Mikko Rantanen. If it's Robertson, I'll take Robertson. If it's Johnston, I'll take Johnston, because I like all three of those players and I trust them in fantasy hockey. Same sort of thing here for Utah, Pete. I see a lot of value in really any of these players. Now, maybe there's a couple I like a bit more. Dylan Gunther, his goal scoring potential, the shots on goal. I think he would be the one I would want on my roster the most. But Clayton Keller is steady. He's solid. Who's to say Keller can't go for that 100-plus point season this year, guys? I think he's got that legit almost first-round value when it comes to fantasy hockey, Pete, especially with all the talent now surrounding him in Utah.
I also really like Logan Cooley. He's one of the fastest players and most electric players, young guys across the whole league. And you see him compare. I look at the point projections and I see a Leo Carlson at 82 and a Logan Cooley at 80. That's a fair debate. Carlson's more established. He's one of the highest paid players in the league now. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if Logan Cooley finished with more points than Leo Carlson. And I am high on Carlson, but these are safe estimates. Like, these guys have an enormous ceiling. They should both be getting up into the 90s as early as this season.
And that's always good to remember when looking at these projections, right? It's kind of that middle ground, but there is that the ceiling for a lot of these players. And then obviously there is the floor. There is the downside, injuries, or just maybe a season that doesn't go their way. Meaning a number that jumped out to me too, Will Smith, the Fresh Prince at 75 points here with the San Jose Sharks. It's going to be tough unless you have a top four, heck, top five pick to get a piece of Macklin Celebrini. But Will Smith is kind of your other route to getting a piece of him. I even saw a video of him hitting bombs in San Francisco in batting practice as well. So the kid can do it all, apparently multi-talented in terms of sports, but we're focused on hockey here. 75 points for Will Smith. I think if he's attached to Macklin Celebrini, seems extremely fair and maybe even potential for a touch more than that.
Absolutely. And health was a little bit of a concern last year, but the 59 points in 69 games, nearly a point per game player in his second season in the NHL. And, you know, you look at Smith and you look at Celebrini, they factored in on the same goal 47 times last year as the sixth most among teammate duos. So these two have an elite chemistry. And again, you're going to add maybe Chernyshev up on that top wing. Colin Graf had a nice season last year. You bring in Mason Marchman. So the San Jose Sharks are loaded. We have eight Sharks in our keeper rankings, 25 and under. That's right there with the Montreal Canadiens among the leaders. So there's a lot to like about the Sharks and the shot volume, I think, Pete, when it comes to Will Smith as well. I mean, we know that Celebrini can shoot the puck. He's a terrific playmaker, of course, but Will Smith, I felt like the more the season went on last year, the more comfortable he was ripping the puck, and that's just going to me, another guy that could score 40 goals this year.
The Sharks are low-key one of the deepest forward groups in the whole league right now, even though they're so young. You throw in Marchment, like you said, they got Kiefer Sherwood last year. He's a beast for category leagues because of his hits and his shots and his goal scoring. I could see him scoring 30 goals if he's up with Celebrini and Smith. And also Tyler Toffoli still on that team. So just so many options for the Sharks to work with to complement that elite Celebrini-Will Smith duo on the top line. Pretty crazy.
I'm seeing both Tkachuk brothers at 87 points, exactly. So we're basically treating them the same right now. A couple of very difficult players to rank or think about going into this season because Tkachuk and the time missed and maybe some injury concerns still with him for Matthew Tkachuk and for Brady Tkachuk coming over to a new situation. We know he's a talented player. I know Pete's a huge Brady Tkachuk guy when it comes to fantasy hockey, but means where do you stand on the Tkachuks? And I guess just Florida in general here, because there's a lot of different names to pick from. It's very loaded. Now there's a Brad Marchand injury concern going into the season as well. Maybe that opens up a little bit more opportunity for somebody to jump up that lineup.
Yeah, we have four Panthers here with at least 83 points. It's inside the top 35. You mentioned the Tkachuk brothers at 87 each. I prefer Brady in a fantasy league, given the categories that he touches. But I think Matthew, even though he's been hurt over the past couple of years, I think he's a little bit more safer. I think he's got the higher ceiling. This is somebody we've seen hit the century mark, can touch all categories as well. Sam Reinhardt in the 84 range, and I think Alexander Barkov, right? Where's Barkov going to go in drafts? Didn't play one game in the NHL last year. So, but we know that this is a point-per-game player. I think he's a better real-life player than a fantasy player. I think some people, you know, shy away from him come draft time. But, Pete, you're telling me we could start the season with potentially Barkov and the Tkachuk brothers? Or maybe it's Barkov, Brady, and Reinhardt? Like, the top six is loaded, and I think it could be a little bit more clear if a guy like Marchand does miss to start the season.
Right, and I also like with that Florida able to sustain its depth. I like Lundell, not necessarily a ceiling guy, but a high floor guy, because he could be with Verhaeghe or Sam Reinhardt or one of the Tkachuk brothers or both of the Tkachuk brothers if they establish chemistry. And like, there's so many different things that they could do with that top nine forward group. Florida is one of the most improved teams in our goalie team win projections. Again, you could find the goalie team win list and also the forward defenseman point list on NHL.com/fantasy. But yeah, I'm also high on Lindell. There's a reason why the Panthers kept this guy. They could have traded him to try to get Hellebuck. They didn't want to do that because they really value this player short and long term.
Well, and there's always got to be somebody in these situations. I want to get into Washington with you guys a little bit as well, but Florida, Washington, to me, feel like two teams that could be loaded, could be a lot of fun to watch this year. Is it going to work out for everybody in fantasy hockey? Probably not. There's got to be a couple guys that it just doesn't happen for. Maybe they get bumped down to a third line, not a lot of power play. There's only so many mouths to feed in an offense, and there's only one puck to go around. And Florida, the one I got my eye on, I think, Pete, you mentioned him there quickly, Carter Verhaeghe, down at 55 points. I think that could be a bit higher depending on the role that he has this year. If he's one of those complimentary pieces, we know he can get that shot off, we know he loves to shoot it, maybe it's going to depend, Meany, who's on that first power play for Florida. But I'm kind of looking at those guys, who's going to be treated as the odd man out, where can I maybe get some value in fantasy hockey when I'm looking at some of these loaded offensive teams.
100%. The two guys that we didn't talk about, you just touched on him and Carter Verhaeghe, and then Sam Bennett. Those are two guys that they may not see a PP1 role, because you got to figure the Tkachuks are there, Barkov, Reinhardt, and maybe they rock Seth Jones on the back end. It could be Aaron Ekblad. They can go five forwards if they want. But Verhaeghe's that guy that can move up and down the lineup, playing a top six role alongside good players. And then Sam Bennett, is he going to center the Tkachuk brothers? That's something as well. So a massive upgrade, I think, for both of those guys when you bring in Brady and just consider everyone healthy besides Marchand for the Florida Panthers. As for the Capitals, they were a tough team to project as well. We have Alex Tuck as the leader there with 70 points. Dylan Strome, I talked about in the last podcast, how I thought he could be a point-per-game player. Maybe that's a little low at 68. We have Kyrou at 67, Tom Wilson at 66, Ovechkin in the mid-60s as well. So, Pete, there's a lot to like. I mean, Protas as well. You got Protas brothers. When we talk about the defensemen in Chikrin and Cole Hudson, I mean, the Washington Capitals are an interesting team to target come draft day, but this is a team for me that I think hits the century mark, and for Logan Thompson, he's going to be my pick to win Vezina. I really do like where Washington's at the moment.
And one guy who's going to benefit by association is Dylan Strome. He's got to be one of the biggest draft bargains, teammate beneficiaries, whether he plays with his trusted sidekick in Ovi, or you could see him on a line with the new guys, maybe Kyrou and Tuck. I mean, or maybe the young guys like Protas and Leonard. I mean, there is a wealth of riches around Dylan Strome this upcoming season if he stays healthy. We have him for 68 points. He could be 84 in 84 games as a ceiling, in my opinion, though.
One name I want to throw up before, we're going to get into some defensemen here, and then we're going to get into the goaltenders a little bit later, but Quinton Byfield is, that might be my flag in the ground here, Meany, for the season, and that could go horribly for me. We're going to have to wait and see. We could track it throughout the podcast the rest of the year, but it just, to me, I've got the feeling, it's just a gut feel that he takes that step this year. LA needs him to. I think I mentioned on a previous show, maybe my one concern would be he's going to have to play a little too much in his own end and worry about that defensive side of the game if he is playing down the middle of the ice, but I like where you guys have him projected here. I think it's a fair number. It would be a career high for him, yeah. And I believe he has potential to go even higher than that. I've got a good feeling about Quinton Byfield this year, and he's probably going to be on my short list of ride or die players when it comes to fantasy hockey.
I'm right there with you, and I think sometimes we're just a year too early on the breakout. We all thought that it was going to happen. It didn't happen, but now Kopitar is not there, and you look at this second half of the season that he had alongside Panarin and Kempe, and this is a guy that had 13 goals and 19 points in 24 games, just 24 games. It's a little bit of a small sample size, but after the Panarin trade, he was nearly a point per game guy. The shot volume went from 2 per game to 2.7, so a little bit more chemistry with Panarin, you know, heading into a full season with him. Pete, on the power play as well, we didn't always see Quinton Byfield on that first unit. And Panarin, again, he is one of the, even though he's a little bit older, I think we have projected for roughly 90 points. Like, he's still one of the elite playmakers in the NHL, Pete.
He always has close to 90 points. I do worry a little bit. Usually offensive totals go down a little bit in LA for whatever reason. So that's why we leaned under 90 points slightly for Panarin. He had about a point per game last year since the trade. But I think that the Kings, not to play devil's advocate, but they're going to really feel in different areas that we don't even know, Kopitar not being there and his two-way prowess through the years. Overall, it's probably a good thing for Byfield that he can finally be thrown into the high usage that we know he's capable of down the road, but there are going to be some growing pains there, I think.
Looking at the blue line here, guys, and some of the stat projections, no surprise who we see at the top of the list. Cale Makar, the $20-plus million man now after signing that big extension with the Colorado Avalanche. But obviously, Quinn Hughes up there as well. Zach Werenski off a couple of excellent offensive seasons. The rumors in Columbus seem to have quieted down a little bit. And Evan Bouchard actually tied for Quinn Hughes in terms of the point projection here, Chris. And I understand it with what he can do in Edmonton with the attachment to that power play with McDavid. David, should we be looking at him closer as a number two option on the blue line in fantasy? It usually goes Makar, Hughes, then maybe we're thinking Werenski, and I tend to think Bouchard slides into that 4 or 5 conversation. Should we be thinking about him a little bit higher, closer to the Makars and Hughes?
I think so, especially when you take into consideration power play points. He had 33 of them last year, Quinn Hughes with 34, in a better situation, of course, Minnesota than to start the season in Vancouver last year, but Bouchard is going to give you those power play points. He's going to give you those assists. He loves to rip the puck. This is a guy that's going to get over 200 shots, and Vegas has him as the highest projected guy among defensemen in terms of points, ahead of Cale Makar in around 83.5, Bouchard around 86.5. You have Quinn Hughes and Zach Werenski around 79.5. So I think clearly Makar is going to be that guy that goes first off the board most likely in your draft. Maybe it's the end of the first, and then Quinn Hughes and Zach Werenski to follow. But if you start your draft with like a McDavid or a Drysdale, and Bouchard is there near the end of the second, that's a pretty good stack. You know, see what you want about the Edmonton Oilers' defensive issues, Pete, but this team is still going to score a lot of goals, and they're going to have one of the best power plays again in the NHL.
And I know across the league, going back 20 plus years, there's barely any guys. I know that Erik Karlsson did it the 1 year, that have hit 100 points as a defenseman. Josi got close when he was in his prime. Don't be surprised. I know we've said it here and there in recent years, but maybe we could see not just one guy get 100 points on the blue line this year in an 84-game season, but maybe it could be like three guys. I'm really high on Quinn Hughes over a full season playing with Kaprizov and Matt Boldy. Quinn Hughes has that ceiling. Bouchard has that ceiling. And certainly Makar, if he could stay healthy for a full season, would have a ceiling of 100-plus points as well.
It's only happened a couple times in the last about 30 years, guys, but I have a feeling a defenseman goes for 30 goals this season. I just think we have so many contenders. We have guys, Zach Werenski certainly one that can do it. I wouldn't put it past Cale Makar running that one back again. Bouchard, Jacob Chychrun, sneaky, as a guy that can score. Doesn't even need the power play time to do it. He could just score even strength as well. And obviously Matt Schaefer, what he did for the Islanders last year as well, 20 plus goals. Could he maybe flirt with 30? I think a lot of potential goal scoring options from the back end this year.
Yeah, I love that call. Chychrun is a guy that is just extremely underrated in fantasy. You know, he does block a lot of shots as well. I wonder what the power play looks like at times with Cole Hudson, because he's a lot like his brother Lane. He's just going to force himself on that first power play at times. But Chychrun's a guy that shoots the puck. There's three defensemen that I think could have, you know, breakout seasons. I'm not sure if they can score 30 goals, but Jackson Lacombe, we saw a little bit of what he did in the postseason. No John Carlson. The defense in Anaheim is thin, so the usage rate should be pretty high. I would expect him to be among the leaders on the blue line in terms of ice time. Brent Clark, similar to, you know, the Kings, and just more usage, more ice time. Drew Doughty's taking a little bit of a back step. And then Brock Faber. Faber scored 15 goals last year. He had 51 points in 80 games. He had 10 points in 11 postseason games. But Pete, when they brought in Quinn Hughes, I think a lot of people thought, okay, automatic, you know, drop in terms of usage. The points are just going to go to Quinn Hughes. But he was actually better with Hughes as his partner. We saw it in the Olympics. We saw it in the postseason. 46 points in 60 games with Hughes. That includes the postseason as well. He's one of three players to have 10 goals, 170 shots, and 140 blocks in the back end. This guy can touch a lot of categories. I think we have him for 57 points, but my goodness, I think he's a guy that could flirt with 20 goals and 65, 68 points. That wouldn't shock me at all.
No, it's a great call. We saw a similar thing actually with Jackson Lacombe in Anaheim when John Carlson came. It felt like he got even better, and then he was close to a point per game in the playoffs. So now John Carlson's gone to Tampa. I like that spot for him quite a bit. His ceiling could still be among the top five defensemen in points. And then two guys I really like, Lacombe, I already mentioned, to carry his team. Anaheim is not deep. They're very thin this year on the blue line, so he's going to have the lion's share of the points there. And then also Schaefer. I don't love the Islanders roster unless some of these young guys become elevated, so Schaefer could even challenge, like you said, 25, 30 goals in his second season, because the Islanders are just going to lean so heavily on this guy.
I would love to see, looking more to the mid-tier of the rankings here for defensemen, guys, I would love to see a bounce back from Brandon Montour in Seattle. I just don't know if I trust that offense whatsoever. Their big move was a deadline move getting Bobby McMahon, and now Mackie Samuskevich joins the fold. It's still a very stale offense in Seattle, but I've always liked Montour as a player. If he could stay healthy, maybe there's potential for him, but again, I wouldn't expect eye-popping numbers. And going back to the Dallas Stars as well means, this is just like we talked about with the group of forwards, they've got a strong group of defensemen with two guys that could potentially have great seasons on the back end, Miro Heiskanen and Thomas Harley. Is this a situation where they kind of box each other out a little bit, where nobody could potentially be that, you know, 80-90 point guy? It's great for the Dallas Stars, but for us fantasy players, it could be kind of tricky picking between these guys.
And I was dead wrong about this power play last year. I thought, you know, with Miro Heiskanen suffering the injury 2 years ago towards the end of the season, Harley was just so elite on the power play. And then I thought that the season would start with Harley on the back end, but it was Miro Heiskanen. Heiskanen was great, don't get me wrong, but Harley, I think he's in for a bounce back season. I mean, he had a 5.3% shooting rate last year. It was 9-10 the previous 2 years, where he had 15 plus goals. So only 6 goals last year and 36 points. He's a really good defenseman that could log a lot of minutes, could maybe find a way to get on that first power play. I mean, being on that first power play, Pete, in Dallas is so beneficial for Miro Heiskanen, the way he can move the puck around, but having that shot from the point as well of Harley. So I think we have him roughly 50 points. Yeah, 49 points right there with Rasmus Anderson, Brendan Montour, Mackenzie Weegar, Dougie Hamilton. These are all decent targets near the end of your draft, whether it could be your third or your fourth defenseman, because I think all four of those guys could kind of bounce back.
Also crazy to see Erik Karlsson still up there. I think you guys have him projected for about 70 points, and I don't blame you. Just there's certain guys you just don't doubt anymore with age, whether it's Ovechkin, Crosby, obviously what he's doing, and Erik Karlsson. I'm curious if the Pens can run it back, but their offensive numbers last year were unbelievable. I still think they're going to be able to score some goals. I just wonder if they're going to be able to defend. Let's hit a quick break here, guys. On the other side, we'll get into some goaltending win and stat projections. Back here on NHL Fantasy on Ice, guys, it's great that Nick isn't here for this episode. We love Nick. We certainly wish him all the best, and he'll be back here soon. But no one hates goaltenders in fantasy more than Nick Alberga, and that's what we're going to get into right now. And nobody gets more frustrated. Look, I've been frustrated by fantasy goaltenders before as well, guys, but not this top name that we're going to talk about. Andrei Vasilevskiy leads the charge in terms of goaltending wins, and meaning he just kind of feels like the one up here that I trust the most, and the team that I probably trust the most as well in the Tampa Bay Lightning. Look, I don't know if they're going to win the cup or even win a round of playoff hockey this year. That's been a trouble for them, but when it comes to the regular season, I know what I'm going to get from the Tampa Bay Lightning. I know what I'm going to get usually from Andrei Vasilevskiy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're still loaded offensively. He's going to get the run support. You bring in Karlsson to replace Darren Radish. The power play is still going to be good. Some questions about Victor Hedman heading into this season, but heard some positive things out of his mouth that he's ready to go. He feels good this year. But I'm not going to draft a goalie in the first round, but if you are going to do it, this is how you do it. You take a guy like Vasilevskiy because, Pete, you know that the games are going to be there. He's consistently been healthy. He has the save percentage, the goals against average, the shutouts, the wins. They're all right there. Even on a down season, which was last year, he still finished as a top goalie in fantasy hockey. So it depends what kind of strategy you want. But if you are going to go get a goalie, this is the one. And I think he can just count on games played. And that's why we have him number one.
And also, big picture, I mean, you think of the best goalies in NHL history, right? Brodeur, Patrick Waugh, guys like that. Dominic Hasek, Vasilevsky's got to be getting close to that conversation, right, guys? He's won multiple cups. He's got the hardware across the board. Each individual season, he's always super consistent. He's got the offensive support around him. I mean, I think more people should be talking about this guy as one of the greatest goalies in the modern era, and also because of his consistent win total of all time, maybe top 10 all time.
And again, if you don't want to go goalie in the first, I like to take those elite 100-point players, 40-goal scorers. It's kind of the way that I attack my drafts. You get down the list here, Jake Oettinger at 38, another good team. Jake, you know that he's going to be the guy. Casey DeSmith going to get some starts here and there, but Oettinger is going to get 60-plus games this year. Logan Thompson at 35 wins. And how about Vemelka? Vemelka quietly had 38 wins last year, which was second behind Vasilevskiy. We have him at 34 wins. This is another guy that's probably going to play 60, 65 games. They don't have, you know, a proven backup. You know, Kosta's a great get, but he's just a rookie. So how much is he going to play? And we already talked earlier, Jake, about Utah's offense. So Vemelka's not a guy that's going to go in the top 10. You want to wait out for goalies? You can get this guy roughly goalie 12, 13, 14, rack up 35 plus wins for you. It's not a bad.
Interesting name, and I like that Utah Mammoth team a lot, and he seems to be able to handle that workload, which is what you're looking for if you're drafting a goaltender that high, guys. We got to talk Connor Hellebuck, though, and this situation with the Winnipeg Jets right now, but probably not the Winnipeg Jets for the future. Obviously, the trade request, and this kind of throws a wrench into everything fantasy hockey. Now, it may depend on when you draft and when a trade ultimately comes down here between Winnipeg and Connor Hellebuck. I think we can kind of piece together potential landing spots for him, so very curious, Meany, how you're treating him when it comes to fantasy drafts. If you're drafting him and he's still on the Winnipeg Jets, are you going to reach maybe a little bit and say, hey, I think a trade's going to happen. I think he's going to land on a really good team, so I'm going to treat him as such. It's a risky play, and I think makes it a very fascinating pick when it comes to drafting this year.
If there was a discount, I would. I'm still seeing him go goalie two or three. It's a little rich for me. I don't think I want to take him in the second, third. I think he's a great buy low in dynasty leagues, but I think, you know, if you own Hellebuck, you're expecting a potential trade as well, so you hang on to him. But Pete, he's coming off a season where he had 23 wins, his fewest since his rookie campaign in 2015, a career low .895 save percentage. He had zero shutouts for the first time in his career as well. We know what he can do. He won the MVP a couple years ago. He leads the league in wins since 2020. Too. Like he is definitely a bounce back candidate, but for me, Pete, there's a lot of uncertainty right now. The Jets aren't forced to trade him, and the Jets future does not look great at the moment either, so I'm just gonna bypass Connor Hellebuck. But again, wouldn't shock me if he was 35, made me look silly, 35, 40 wins, like that wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, unfortunately, Winnipeg's a one-line team right now. I know you did the projections means for them, and it was a struggle to find guys who would exceed 40 points on that team. So hopefully, if they do trade him, they can get four or five pieces back in return and kind of restructure that whole lineup, because it certainly needs it in the forward group and skater group in general. Yeah, Hellebuck, I would be really excited to see where he might land on any of those different contenders that could use him. I know the Devils could use a goalie, certainly the Sabres. It could put a team like that over the top. The Sharks have all those riches in the farm system and so much depth, so they probably need a goalie and some help in that regard. So stay tuned on that one, but I would like to have Hellebuck regardless of where he lands.
I wouldn't even rule out the two teams that played in the Cup final last year, guys, right? Carolina, Vegas, right? I mean, look, Bussey was a great story, and I see you guys have him 33 projected wins. Look, if he's the guy in Carolina, that number makes a lot of sense, but there's a lot up in the air there, and they could see an opportunity to get Hellebuck with a very strong roster. And Vegas, guys, do I need to say anymore? If there's a big name player out there available, you know Vegas is going to be working the phones. They're going to be interested, right, Pete?
Well, Brandon Bussey, the pride of Long Island, has to be maybe the best kept secret in fantasy hockey. If he goes into the season now that Freddie Anderson is gone to Edmonton, this guy has a very high ceiling in terms of wins. He could even get to 40 if he's the clear 1A over Kochetkov. And I'm fastest goalie in NHL history last year as an unknown commodity to 30 wins. Nobody's ever done it faster. And then, oh, by the way, stepped in for Freddie in the Cup final and had a series clinching Stanley Cup winning shutout. I mean, that doesn't happen by accident. That's no coincidence there. This guy might be an efficient enough goalie to have 40 wins in the next couple of years.
Let's talk about efficiency. 31-6-2. That was his record last year. 31-6-2, tied for fourth among goalies in wins. This is his first season in the league. Like, Carolina's legit. They're projected for 108 points. I mean, you don't need me to say that. They just won the Stanley Cup. But this is a team that doesn't give up anything, right? Kochetkov's a guy that hasn't stayed healthy. Frederick Anderson is not there. So he's probably one of my favorite targets, Bussey, because you can kind of get him around goalie 8 or 9. I love Logan Thompson, but he's going to go pretty early in drafts. I like the idea of Jesper Wallstad owning the net in Minnesota, maybe Jakob Dobish owning the net in Montreal, those two targets. But I think Brandon Bussey's a guy that can kind of slip down draft boards just a touch. In terms of bounce back goalies, I think Linus Allmark is one that could bounce back. We have him for 31 wins. Last year went pretty bad for him last year. I think he can attack Scott Wedgwood and even get Mackenzie Blackwood and just rock that tandem in Colorado. I think he can kind of do the same thing when in Buffalo with UPL and maybe Alex Lyon. But the one goalie that I really think is in for a breakout campaign, and Pete's heard me talk about it a lot, but Joel Hofer. Joel Hofer, you know, Bennington's last year on his deal, it was a career worst season for Bennington in terms of save percentage and goals against average. Hofer had 6 shutouts, tied for second. Actually, it was solo second in the NHL. He had 24 wins. He had a career best 2.61 goals against average. After the Olympics, he owned the crease. He was 12-2-2, tied for first in wins with the 12. He was third in goals against average and save percentage at .933. So the Blues are a team that should bounce back a little bit. I'm unsure if they're a playoff team, Jake, but Joel Hofer to me is as a breakout candidate. I wouldn't be shocked if this time next year we're talking about him being a top 10 goalie.
A contract year as well. Him and Jordan Binnington going into a big years there in St. Louis. So I like that call a lot. I also like maybe going for the Lumberyard in Colorado with Wedgwood and Blackwood, getting the wood tandem there. I think that's a great way to play it. If you can pull it off, I think that's a real solid play. Frederick Anderson in Edmonton, especially now with injury concerns going into the season, I want no part of that. I already would want no part of that. And I'll speak for Nick Alberga, who's not here today. I know he would also want no part of that situation in Edmonton. And once again, we're talking goaltending at Edmonton. I'll give you my name. I'm going to be looking at it. Won't surprise anybody who's listening to me on the pod before. Jet Greaves in Columbus. Murky on what Columbus is going to be this year, Pete. I think a middle of the pack team that could certainly push for a wild card spot, maybe the 3 spot in the Metro if everything goes really, really well. But I like Jet Greaves. I think he's a great goaltender. I think he's going to play a lot of games. Elvis Merzlikins injury concerns now going into the year, so the net is very much his in Columbus, and I think he could potentially run with it. Solid season last year. I think he's got a legitimate chance to build off it this year.
I like the way that team played under Rick Bowness, and he kind of shook up the room down the stretch, right? They played so well. They had that like 10-15 game streak where they barely lost at all, and then they kind of fell apart at the end, and I think he is going to try to correct things to get that team's mindset on the right track long term. And when you look at the top line, even there's gonna be some run support for Greaves. Like, they got Nichushkin. That's got to be one of the biggest low-key sleeper pickups of the offseason. If it goes well, we have him projected for 55 points, but he could get 65 or 70 in a hurry if he's up there with Fantilli and Marchenko, so, and obviously Werenski on the power play. So they could be a fringe contender. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, but they're going to be close because they have to be, right? They're trying to fight for Zach Werenski to keep this guy for the long term.
I think that's just it. There's two ways I think it can go in Columbus. They start strong. Werenski's happy. Marchenko's happy. Jack Greaves is playing. You mentioned Merzlikins, who's hurt. And Greaves had pretty good ratios as well. Like a .908 save percentage and a 2.61 goals against average is pretty solid for a goalie that you can probably get outside of pick 15, 20 at the position. Or the other way it can go, it starts sour and they start trading some of these guys. But I actually feel like they'll have a strong start to the season. And I kind of like where they've been at the past couple of years, just with a few losing streaks, kind of missing out on the playoffs. Two other goalies I want to bring up to you. I don't know if you guys feel like Askarov's a guy that could maybe break out. We like the Sharks. We like the Sharks offense, and say what you want about Trouba or Nurse, but those are better defensemen that they had last year. Let's be honest. Right. And then also we were talking about tandems. If you do get a guy like Markstrom, Jake, are you interested at all in Akira Schmid? Is that a tandem that you could feel comfortable rocking? Because Schmid, Markstrom will cost you something. You know, top 10 pick probably at the goalie position. Schmid could be your last pick. You could fall into 45, 50 wins.
I think that's the tandem that realistically you're probably going to end with. If you do the tandem approach, I mentioned the Lumberyard in Colorado earlier. Going to be really tricky to get Wedgwood and Blackwood with what you'd have to spend. You could pull it off, but it's not going to be easy. I think this one's more realistic, where you take a goaltender with some risk in Markstrom. And certainly, if I'm taking Markstrom, I'm rolling the dice on the health. I want the backup. That is one where I certainly want the insurance. And I could look at it, and you guys did some team win projections as well, Pete. And I look at it and I say, Florida's projected to win a lot of games. Just give me both Florida goaltenders. And if both get hurt, then hopefully I'm lucky I could find the next guy on the wire. But I don't mind that approach when it comes to fantasy goaltending. It only works for a few teams, the teams you guys have projected with the highest wins here. But certainly a strategy I don't mind playing in fantasy hockey now.
And I mentioned earlier how Florida is one of the most improved teams. We also like the Sharks in that regard. We have in recent years, but they've beefed up the entire lineup around their stars. So we like them for, you know, plus five wins or so. The highest discrepancies in favor of a most improved team would be Toronto at plus 12, Florida plus 10, Washington plus 7. You also have Vegas. They're going to have a new coach, so that's going to be interesting. But if that team stays healthy, they don't have Dorofeev, but I still feel like they're the best team in the Pacific. So maybe they go up by 5+ wins as well.
And you're right about the Colorado tandem. A little tough to get. Last year, it was very easy to get because Wedgwood was near the end. But the season that he had, he's probably going to go ahead of Blackwood. But yeah, we have Colorado for 53 wins. We have Carolina for 52, Florida for 50. But, you know, a big jump for the Toronto Maple Leafs, right? 32 wins going up to 44 wins. Bobrovsky, you know, it's another guy, too, we didn't really touch on in this episode. But as long as he's healthy, he's a guy that, you know, kind of project for 30+ wins. And you know, if he wanted to get Stolarz near the end of your draft, hey, that tandem worked out pretty good for Florida a couple years ago, didn't it?
It did, right? And look, maybe the smart play is just to go with the safer teams in teams like Carolina that we know Carolina is going to be really good unless something totally disastrous happens, and you go Bussy, Kochetkov. I think that's a realistic tandem that you could get. Now every time I click Kochetkov in fantasy hockey, guys, it never really works out for me too well, and he usually ends up back on the wire or on my injured reserve. But look, that's why you have both goaltenders. If Bussy's healthy, it's probably going to be his net. But I think that would be an interesting tandem. And there is a lot of Leafs love in these team win projections, Petey. And I think it's fair with McKenna coming in, Radish on the back end. I don't know if it's going to be functional and result in a playoff spot for them. But I think for fantasy, they are going to be a very exciting team this year, whether it's drafting some of their forwards for bounce backs that we talked about, taking a rookie in McKenna, taking Darren Radish, who we didn't really get into in the defense projections, but is projected quite high as well.
It's tough for the Leafs because we have them for plus 12, but they still might not be enough for them to make the playoffs, because in front of them in the pecking order you have Florida, Montreal, Tampa, and Buffalo. I don't see any significant regression for any of those teams. And even Boston, we saw how they hung around last year and exceeded our expectations. Who's better, Boston or Toronto? That's pretty close, and it's a toss-up with Buffalo and Tampa as well. So that division, I think, is the deepest in the entire NHL. But at least the Leafs, you know, as they get McKenna into the fold and Darren Radish and Sergei Bobrovsky, they will be right in that equation for a wild card spot, I believe.
We have a slight downtick for just about every team in the Atlantic. Florida and Toronto improving, but everybody else kind of dipping down a little bit, with Florida and Toronto improving. And you look at the Pacific, we have everyone with an uptick. As bad as that division was last year, even Vegas and Edmonton and San Jose with an improvement, similar output for the Ducks, the Flames and Seattle, and even Vancouver with an improvement. But it wouldn't take much to improve on last year's total. You know, one team I think is sneaky, and when you bring up Toronto, you kind of talk about the big names, but I think their bottom six improves. So I think they won't play in their own end as much this year as they did last year. And I think you can kind of see the same thing for Nashville. They made some sneaky good moves. So the bottom six, I think, is improved. I think you can maybe count on a bounce back for Saros and net, maybe Roman Josi on the back end, maybe Marchessault potentially. But you bring in Maverick Bourque, who could be their center too. Luke Evangelista, we talked about this on the sleeper episode, right? You had Stamkos and Forsberg scoring 40 goals last year. Ryan O'Reilly was great. So, you know, Nashville's a team we have for two more wins. I wouldn't be shocked if they were, you know, a wild card team this year in the West.
I'm totally with you on Nashville. When I was going through team previews throughout the course of August, really delving into some of the moves, you don't catch everything in the offseason, and maybe some things fly under the radar. I think Nashville and what they did with what Chris McFarland accomplished flew under the radar. I kind of grouped them, St. Louis, and Winnipeg all together in the Central as teams that could kind of go either way and could certainly make a push at a postseason spot. So I'm with you there on that one, Meany. And the Pacific, these projected win totals for the Pacific, guys, are pretty ugly. In terms of how low they are. And look, it's probably warranted based on the season that we had last year. And I am seeing LA third of third out of the California teams. I think I'm going to be more pro LA than most people. And we're going to, again, wait to see how that plays out throughout the course of the season. I think there's more to LA with a full season of Panarin. But Petey, seeing San Jose catch the Anaheim Ducks, maybe the Ducks being knocked down. I didn't love the Ducks offseason. So I have a feeling they could get caught by the rest of these California teams.
I mean, the Ducks need this offseason to end, and it's not even over yet with the Cutter Gauthier thing. So hopefully they could get him under contract for moving forward. They still have a good young core, but the depth has been ravaged, unfortunately, by having to pay Leo Carlson so much money, and they're going to have to maybe pay, you know, Cutter just as much. So we'll keep an eye on that. But I do like the Sharks ahead of the Ducks and the Kings long term, and even this season as one of the top three in the Pacific. Edmonton I do worry about, but because the Pacific is so rough, like you said, they should still make the playoffs.
I'm with you on the Kings, man. I really am. I think if they can get some stability in net between Kemper and Forsberg, who was actually pretty good last year, sneaky good for them, I think that they could be a playoff team. I think the Ducks are, this time last year, loved Anaheim, loved their situation. You know, you guys have kind of already addressed it, but they're not in a great spot right now, and the blue line doesn't look good, and I'm kind of worried about Lucas Dostal. He faced so much rubber last year. If the defense is worse, then he's going to see even more. How about the Metro? If you were to choose a team to finish behind Carolina and Washington, who would it be for you, Jake? We have the Flyers with a similar output, New Jersey with a... all these teams actually similar outputs, with the Rangers a little bit of a bump, but I think they're still kind of chasing the pack. But is there a team that you like after Carolina, Washington, maybe to be improved or to be that third, be that three team in the Metro?
I think for me, it is going to be the Philadelphia Flyers. I really liked what I saw from them. I became enamored with them late last season. Porter Marteau, a full season of him. I like what they've done around him as well. And the goaltending looks stable. Dan Vladar, when was the last time we've been able to say stable goaltending in Philadelphia? Dan Vladar and now Joseph Woll joining as well. So I think that they're the safer play for me, but New Jersey to me is the ceiling team that I always kind of get excited about the roster. And then they always disappoint me every single year, Pete. So I'm going to go Philly for an actual projection here. I like them in that three spot in the Metro, but I would not be shocked if the Devils have that ceiling season. If Hughes can stay healthy, or Jack Hughes, that is, and kind of everything come together there and it work out, I could see the Devils being that three team.
Right. We have six teams after Carolina and Washington separated by five wins. So it really could be any of them. Even the Rangers. Look at, I know the Rangers are a bit top heavy right now, but they do have some young pieces. They got a 25-year-old goal scorer in Dorofeev, an elite one at that. They have Gabe Perreault. You know, he played really well with Zibanejad down the stretch of the season. There are trends like that. And the biggest overarching thing with the Rangers, if they're going to get back into contention here, is Shesterkin and Fox need to be healthy. They're a much different team when those two are healthy. They played a little bit better, especially at home down the stretch of the season. And I think if those two are healthy, that's why we have the Rangers at plus five in wins compared to last year. Just assuming those guys are in the lineup more often, it'll make a big deal.
Well, guys, it's time to start organizing those fantasy drafts, which I know can be a frustrating process for a lot of people out there, getting everybody on the same page, same time, same draft room, but it is an exciting time of the year. We're officially in September, and that means we're in the month where NHL regular season hockey will be played, and that's also going to mean a lot more NHL Fantasy on Ice podcast moving forward. We'll be back next week. Nick Alberga will also be back next week. Spread the word on that, and we'll get into the mock draft. We'll talk to you then.